Sports Hub Hockey Show with Ryan Johnston, Judd Zerai, and Bob Beers on the home of the Bees, 98.5 The Sports Hub.
Hi, welcome into another edition of the Sports Hub Hockey Show here on a Saturday morning. From the Town Fair Tire Studios, I'm Ryan Johnston. And over at TD Garden this morning, we've got Judd Zerai and Bob Beers. They are over there because it's a 1 o'clock face-off today between the Bruins and the LA Kings. A busy weekend over at the Garden, a couple of matinee performances for the Bees today against the Kings and Sunday against Colorado as well. And we welcome in the guys right now. What's going on this morning, boys?
Not much. Some guys early out for the LA Kings as they're getting set for today.
Always love these early morning skates as the extra guy.
That's a really early morning skate for a team from the West Coast, too. It's a nice early 6 a.m. Pacific time wake-up call. All right, so here we go. Let's get into a matchup or a few matchups this week with the Bruins against a team last Sunday that they have had massive amounts of trouble against over the course of the past few years in Washington. They win that one. They play one of the hotter teams in the league on Tuesday night. They win that one. They come back on Wednesday night, and they let a lead get away against the Rangers. Kind of sum up the week for us a little bit. You know, what'd you like? What did you not like?
Well, I think it's obviously a positive that you took, what, five of a possible 6 points. But I don't think that there's any question that most of the guys in that room and the coaching staff feels like it should have been 6 of 6 after taking a two-goal lead into the final 11 minutes of regulation at Madison Square Garden the other night in New York. But against Washington, the Bruins, they were exceptional, especially through the first two periods. Braden Holtby was the only guy keeping the Caps afloat. It was a terrific effort by the Bruins. Any comeback, Patrice Bergeron, playing in his 1,000th game, was unquestionably the number one star in picking up the victory at TD Garden. But you still see, a few of the cracks that the Bruins have exhibited across, what is it now, almost 55 games during the course of the season, that occasionally they have not gotten the balance scoring that they've wanted, that occasionally late down the stretch that there's been a little bit of a break in their structure, and that's something that they've got to improve here down the stretch as they look ahead to the final 2.5 months of the season.
Yeah, no doubt a sour taste in their mouth after New York the other day. You're up 3-1 going into the third period. You expect to close those games out. And you know, the last few games that the Bruins have lost, in their losses, they've been ahead, actually, going into the third period. And they've gotten points out of the games. I guess that's the positive side of things. You always say if you're going to lose games, and you are at some point during the season, then make sure you at least get a point out of them. And that's what the Bruins have done here recently. But that being said, you expected to get the extra points. So 5 out of 6 points, yeah, that's a positive. You like the way that you played, and it is more about the way that you played. You tightened up defensively in the games prior to the Ranger game. You played pretty well, very well, in the second period of the Ranger game, and then you just had that one breakdown that's kind of plagued them a little bit at critical times where, guy gets, behind the D on that stretch pass. Really shouldn't have happened, and eventually the puck's in the back of the net. It was the third wave. It was the third layer there of Rangers that ended up scoring that goal in Hayes. And then you get the other one on the power play after you got hemmed inside your own zone and took a penalty. So, it's kind of the way that you lost that game, I think, that's more disturbing if you're the coaching staff saying, look, we do the right things, and then we have that one breakdown. So that's something that was being preached prior to the Washington game. They tightened up for the Capitals. They got the win. That had to be a huge burden off of their shoulders. Okay, now we can kind of check that box. And I like the way that they played a lot of the week. They got the goaltending. They did a lot of the right things in the way that you need to play in order to win hockey games. If you're not going to score a lot of goals, okay, how do we have to defend? They got that. They checked that one, and it was just a couple of breakdowns in the Ranger game that plagued them.
Yeah, we talked a lot last week, and Bob, you kind of alluded to it, but prior to that game against Washington, Bruce Cassidy had kind of called out his team, talking about how they needed
some buy-in from some of the guys. He called out Zdeno Chara and said, you know, he needs to be better, and, you know, talked about leadership a little bit and, you know, and things of that nature. And we kind of wondered, okay, well, how are they going to respond to that? They come out, you know, last Sunday with a 1-0 win over a team that they hadn't beaten in 14 games. I mean, obviously, that's exactly what he was hoping for.
They're not scoring, you know, you're not getting a lot of scoring. So how are you going to win games? I mean, you've got to defend well, and that's the strength of your team right now is, and I think as a group, you know, the defensemen, and then the way that you buy in and play team defense. You know, you look at the lines and the way they're constituted, and we'll get into this, I'm sure, here, Ryan, the fact that they changed up the lines against the Rangers as that game went on. It looks like they're going to change them up again here today, but how are you going to play team defense? If you're still looking for secondary scoring, you're still looking for ways to produce 5-on-5 and to improve 5-on-5. But until that happens, you better defend well, and you got to get the goaltending. And that's got to be a formula for success right now. And this isn't a team that's going to score a ton. So you've got to realize it and say, okay, you know, we're going to have to do this, you know, in order to win hockey games. I like the way that they bought in. I love the fact that, you know, Bruce Cassidy can criticize or, you know, constructively criticize players and say that we need this and we need to be better here and there. And the guys respond. And I think that that's a tribute to the leadership that they have and the guys that, you know, they're not going to pout. They're not going to sit around and, you know, go the other direction. You see teams do that all the time. But this team responds, and they have responded. So they're in a good spot right now in the standings. You know, Montreal's been hot, so you haven't really been able to catch them, or you've been right near them. I mean, they were in third place the other day, or tied with the Canadiens. They're a little bit behind Toronto in the standings. You like where they're at right now, and if they continue to play this good team structured defense, and then hopefully something pops here maybe between now and the deadline, or maybe something pops offensively with the group that they have, you know, you like where they're at.
As a player, and we've talked about this a little bit before, but as a player, you know, when Bruce Cassidy is calling guys out publicly like that, as you said, sometimes you see it go the other direction. What is it about the way he does it or the way that he handles these players that they do seem to respond to him, even though he's a guy who doesn't pull punches? I mean, he's willing to tell you what he thinks, it seems like, anytime there's a microphone in front of him.
Well, I think you basically said it right there. I think it's the honesty. And if you ask all players around the National Hockey League, coming up through the minors, I'm sure you experienced this too, Ryan, that what they want from the coaching staff is they want honesty. But I think one of Bruce's strengths is his ability to communicate that message in a positive fashion and to frame it in the right way. And because of that, I think you see the response and you see the respect level coming from the players to the head coach, because he also has a high level of respect for the players that are playing under him.
It's matter of fact. You know what I mean? It's not, I mean, he's not always like that. You know, what you see. I think on the bench he can get pretty fiery. He says, how did he describe it the other day when we had an interview with him? It was, I think I can run a little hot on the bench. So, you know, the temperature can be a little high on the bench. But you know, that's heat of the moment. I think that, you know, as a player, you want to know where you stand. You might not like it all the time. You might not agree with it, but you want to know where you stand. And I think the level of communication is good in that regard, very good in that regard, with not only Bruce Cassidy but the whole coaching staff, with where the players stand. And look, if you're a guy that's sitting out, you're not going to like it. I would hope not. You know, you don't want to be that guy that's sitting out. But at the same time, okay, I got to work. I got to get myself back in. Or if my ice time is cut, or if my line has changed, you know, those are things that happen over a course of a season. It's a long year, and you've got to be able to deal with that stuff. And so how does your coach convey that message to you to get the most out of you? And I do think it's a lot to do with the leadership. After the game against Philadelphia last week, when he was asked about Zdeno Chara, and he was very matter of fact in his criticism after the game, and it wasn't just Char, it was you know, everybody buying in, and he mentioned a few other names. But if you just criticize the fourth line guy or the guy that's sitting out, or if you just criticize the seventh defenseman, the message isn't going to get there. You've got to be able to criticize some of your top end guys once in a while, and then have the proper response, you know, moving forward. And I do think that says a lot to the character of the guys that, that lead this team. And it that goes a long way. These guys have been successful. They've been there. The core of the group I'm talking about, and they've got to be the ones that lead the team. And if they lead, then everybody else should be buying in, and they have that right now.
And Cassidy's also talked about that he's evolved the way he delivers the messages to his team. He even mentioned the other day that sometimes he will use the media in order to deliver the message, but at the same time, he had a one-on-one conversation with the captain, Zdeno Chara. I'm sure he had other one-on-one conversations between games in order to get that message across. And to do it in the right way.
Right. So they're hearing the same, you know, if, what they're hearing in the media is what they're hearing in the room, right? I mean, it's not, he's not calling them out and then just, you know, leaving it at that. It's.
Well, they're hearing more in the room.
Well, no.
They're hearing more in the room.
Like it, what I'm saying is you might get a coach that says, okay, I'm going to call this guy out, but then not have that conversation with him privately. And now the guy, I could understand why that would be upsetting you because, you know, you're not getting the one-on-one. But as long as that message is consistent, I think people can deal with that, right?
Yeah, and, you know, they'll sit down video session. Okay, here's what's positive, here's what's negative, you know, and here's what needs to be better in order for this to happen. And, you know, but you're right in the fact that, yeah, he'll have that one-on-one conversation or somebody from his coaching staff will have that one-on-one conversation with a player. If he's asked about him in the media and he brings his name up, you know, that conversation's already been had or will happen because – yeah, as a player, you don't want to hear yourself singled out in the media, and then you have no conversation with the coach. So that's not going to work either. But I think the communication, the line of communication is open. I think it's positive for the most part. When it's negative, you know, it's matter of fact, and here's what needs to be better if you're going to get more ice time and you're going to be more important role.
All right, a lot to get to this morning. We will get into, as Bob said, we'll get into some of the shuffling of the lines this week, especially in that Ranger game, and what to expect today as they take on the LA Kings. The guys are over at the Garden this morning, 617-779-0985 for your phone calls coming up next here on the Sports Hub Hockey Show.
This is where Boston talks hockey. 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 The Sports Hub Hockey Show.
to get through to us here on the Sports Hub Hockey Show. Ryan Johnston in the Town Fair Tire Studios, Judd Surratt and Bob Beers joining me from over at the Garden this morning as the Bruins get set for a 1 o'clock faceoff against the LA Kings. Let's get into some of your phone calls here in the early going. Maria in Watertown is up first. Good morning, Maria.
Good morning, guys. Just quickly, I'd like to congratulate Patrice Bergeron on his 1,000th game. This kid from day one has been the epitome of everything you want in any professional athlete, and it's a pleasure to watch him and to root for him. And now on to the Bruins' big issue, which to me is a carryover from last season's playoffs where you knew you didn't have secondary scoring. That's why you got bounced and smacked by the Tampa Bay Lightning. And here we are, once again, getting close to making a playoff run, and we still haven't addressed a serious need. The Bruins are second to last in 5-on-5 scoring, second to last. And if Donnie Sweeney doesn't remedy that going into this playoff, then sadly, I'm going to point my finger at him and put blame on him. And then I read that Bruce Cassidy is also considering trying to rest Chara here or there. And I'm wondering how you gentlemen think he's going to be able to do that with the playoff standings as tight as they are right now. Thanks so much, guys. Have a great day.
I'd appreciate the call. I mean, look, we are a couple of weeks out from the trade deadline. The names have been out there for a while about some guys that the Bruins might be going to target and all of that. But, you know, I think we get into this kind of situation on a regular basis. It seems like as the trade deadline gets closer, it's like, okay, when are they going to do it? When are they going to do it? When are they going to do it? And it might not be, you know, take until deadline day, but it usually takes until fairly close to that before teams really start pulling the trigger on a lot of significant moves. So the urgency can be there from the Bruins guys, but it doesn't necessarily mean that the deals are ready to be made a couple of weeks out, because everybody's still kind of testing the market at this point.
Well, you've seen two teams here recently make some moves. Obviously, yep. Toronto picked up Jake Muzzin from the LA Kings. You saw Nashville starting to make a few moves with Brian Boyle. And talking to a few scouts after
Pittsburgh.
Pittsburgh also making a few moves. But with the Boyle move in particular, I think that sent a little bit of a shudder around the marketplace in the National Hockey League to pay a second-round pick for a guy who will probably be your fourth-line center or potentially a bottom-six wing. I think that there was a feeling around for a lot of National Hockey League clubs that that was a pretty high price to pay. So let's see what the market is like as we get a little bit closer to February 25th.
Yeah, and, you know, how often do we hear all these names pop up at the trade deadline, and then how often does that trade happen with the Bruins? So just because there's names out there, don't get over saying these guys have to come here or this guy has to come here. I mean, there's a lot of players in the league, and you know, a lot of times the trade that happens is not a name that you hear. You know, I'm sure that they kick the tires on everybody, right? But at the same time, there's a lot of different players around the league. There's a lot of players that maybe not as common name, a household name as maybe some of the ones that are out there right now. So, look, you know that the Bruins are looking for it. They identified it last year. They did. They knew that they needed to upgrade at that position, and they brought in Rick Nash, which was a huge upgrade on what they had. It didn't work out for various reasons. But they know that they still have a hole there. And, okay, how do they fill that hole? And they've tried to fill it internally all season long. You know, you try to give these guys an opportunity at that role and other ones. You give them every opportunity to shine. But you're coming down to crunch time right now. And if you're going to compete, you know, in a seven-game series against some of the top teams, you're probably going to need that upgrade right now. And it's not lost. It's not lost on Don Sweeney and the organization that they know that they probably need that upgrade. So they're working at it. You got, what, 2.5 weeks? What is it, 2 weeks?
Just over 2 weeks.
What's the date?
You're asking me to do math. It's the 25th.
25th.
Okay. Yeah, so it's coming. It's coming fast. I mean, the Bruins, we go on the road trip here coming up out west in Vegas and St. Louis, and then when you get home, it's the 23rd, and you're right there. So it's going to come quick.
Well, and then also think back to last summer, Ryan. You know, they were in the John Tavares sweepstakes. They were also in the Ilya Kovalchuk sweepstakes. So those were two guys that they talked about before the season began as possible adds to their roster. Obviously, Tavares wound up in Toronto, and Ilya Kovalchuk wound up with the LA Kings, where he has a full no move. There's a question whether or not he would waive that here down the stretch. My understanding is that after he picks up a bonus payment on July 1st, actual salary paid over the last 2 years of the contract will only be $5 million. So it's not going to cost a club a lot in real dollars if they acquire him. It's just the cap hit that you have to absorb.
Right, which tends to make those guys pretty valuable, because the owner doesn't have to put out the paycheck. But as you said, you still have to deal with the cap hit, and that is significant. And it's going to be significant for anybody who if you're going to fill a top six role on this team, it's not going to be cheap, right? It's not going to be cheap to bring in that player, and it's not going to be cheap financially, most likely, if that person has any term left on the contract.
And the other thing in bigger terms, if we look at the bigger picture, Ryan, heading into the season, the Bruins were hoping that Jacob Forsback at Carlson could man the third-line center position. They gave him a couple of opportunities to try and seize that. They got a good, solid look at what he is and where he needs to improve. Now they brought in Trent Frederick. The Bruins said at some point we were going to take a look at him. It just so happened that it was here in the last few weeks. So you get a gauge on where his development is at this point and where he needs to go moving forward.
All right, let's go to Chris. You're up next here on the Sports Hub Hockey Show. Good morning.
Hey, guys. Bob, I got a quick question and a comment. With the Bruins struggling with secondary scoring, McAvoy and Krug, some of their better offensive players, whether they play defensive or not, have stepped up their presence in the offensive zone. But the forwards, minus Bergeron, sometimes have a problem rotating backwards to reduce the odd man rushes. You can understand the inclination is from the forwards that we got numbers, let's keep up the pressure. But I see that the Bruins have been giving up a lot of odd man rushes. How does a odd man rushes, Bob, how does a forward take on that responsibility of not giving those up but yet still keep the pressure on? That's my question.
Well, I think it goes hand in hand, right? I mean, you want the D to be more active. You want them to be more involved from an offensive standpoint in that offensive zone. But they also have to be aware if there's no support, right? So, you know, if you don't have a guy high, if you don't have that third man high, maybe you can't pinch down the boards. If it's a 50-50 puck, if you think you can get there, but you're not sure, maybe you got to take the more conservative route. But they want those guys active. They want them more involved in the offensive end because you can keep pressure on a team defensively. But you've got to have them working in sync. And I think we've seen that the last three games. I mean, there's been very few odd man rushes the last three games. So the criticism was there for them. I'm sure there was a lot of video involved, when to go, when not to go, when to try to attempt a pass that maybe he's not going to get there. So if you got a defenseman jumping into a hole and you got a forward trying to make a pass through some bodies and some sticks, you know, it's a high-risk play. It's not quite there. Now you're giving up an odd-man rush because your defenseman's down deep and you don't have anybody rotating back. There's been a lot of odd-man rushes on the power play this year. I think they've reduced those here recently, though. But they haven't given up any shorthanded goals in a while. So that was another thing that was addressed because they were giving up all kinds of shorthanded goals and all kinds of shorthanded chances. So there's risk-reward. And I think when a team is struggling to score 5-on-5 and you're looking at ways to create offense, maybe you're thinking a little bit more on that offensive side of the puck and you'll give up some of those odd-man rushes. And I think the mentality has changed here over the last few games where, look, we got to win some games 2-1. We got to win some one-goal games, some low-scoring games, and if we're going to do that, we can't be giving up these types of chances at the other end. That's why that breakaway by Buchnevich was tough to take. You know, you're in control of the game. It's 3-1. You're playing a good period. The Bruins were doing things that they wanted to do in that period early on in the third, and then all of a sudden that one breakdown and things just the whole tenor of the game changes.
All right, we've got plenty more to get to here on this edition of the Sports Hub Hockey Show. We'll get Sports Hub headlines here with Sarge. Joe Haggerty is going to check in with us coming up in a few minutes, and we'll get to more of your calls on the way as well. 617-779-0985. It is the Sports Hub Hockey Show on a Saturday morning.
Get in on the discussion. 617-779-0985. The Sports Hub Hockey Show on 98.5. The Sports Hub.
Sports Hub Hockey Show. Each week at this time, we welcome in Joe Haggerty from NBC Sports Boston. He joins us now on the Volkswagen Dealers Expert Hotline. Good morning, Hags.
Good morning, Brad. What's going on?
All right, so Maria in Watertown wants to know, where's the urgency?
The urgency as far as what? As far as the way that they're playing? As far as making a deal? As far as you got to be more specific here, my friend.
Trade deadline urgency. It's difficult because we've talked about this for so long. I mean, this has been kind of the narrative of this season, right? That this is a good team, but it needs upgrades at a couple of positions here. We're still a couple of weeks away from the trade deadline. As Judd mentioned in the last segment, we've started to see a little bit of movement, some teams that are making some deals. At what point do you think, because I don't think it's a question about whether the Bruins will make a deal. It's just a question of when, right?
Yeah, I think it's a question of when, but I also think it's a question of what the magnitude of the deal is going to be. And, you know, it's going to be interesting to see how that plays out. You know, take this for what it's worth, but like talking to a few players yesterday, it seemed like there hasn't been a lot of discussion among them like there has been in years past about what trade is coming, what the Bruins are going to do, and, you know, there being any level of like tension in that dressing room about it, which I found interesting. And I'm not even sure exactly why that is, but, you know, I think right now what the Bruins management at least is trying to do is not succumb to, you know, the outside pressure of trying to make a deal and just doing the best deal possible for the team and what makes the most sense. And I think given the prices that are out there, given the players that are available, and given the amount of suitors that are out there as well, you know, there's going to be a lot of challenges, and there could be a potentially high price to be paid. It could even be for a player that's not the, you know, the perfect fit for the Bruins. It's really interesting that, you know, you hear chatter about Tampa and the Bruins potentially being the teams that make the most sense for Wayne Simmonds, and is that going to drive the price up, that it's a couple of teams in the Atlantic Division, you know, that may face each other in the playoffs, and, you know, what Tampa's already loaded. Do they already need to make all these deadline moves as well? It's like the rich getting richer. It'll be interesting to see how it all plays out, but I don't sense urgency right at the second to make a deal. I still think the Bruins are evaluating. Obviously, they put Pastrnak down with Krejci and have Solaric on a strong side now on that second line. They put Jake DeBrusk on the third line. Now, some of that's about performance. Some of it maybe is also getting a look at what he would look like on that third line as well. And it looks like the Bruins are trying to get a handle on what this team would look like if they didn't make a move, and then get a handle on what exactly they need to go out and get, whether it's the third line center or the winger for David Krejci's line.
Thanks. Is there any chance you could move to a little bit of a quieter area?
Yes, the hockey sounds in the background.
Just a little bit. Hags is doing the parenting thing. We can respect that, but, you know, just want to make sure we can understand what you're saying at the same time. All right,
so in the
discussion, obviously, you mentioned Wayne Simmonds. Panarin's name has come up. Obviously, you know, everybody expects him to be on the move. Michael Ferland is a name we hear a lot. Tyler Toffoli's name is starting to get tossed into the mix as well out in L.A.
Evan Hayes, Chris Kreider, guys from the Rangers as well.
Yeah, I mean, so, look, different ones of those guys bring different things to the team, and they also have different issues as far as whether it be salaries or term left on the contract or whatever. What would be your ideal off of the list of the names that we've heard out there? Who would be the guy that you would really want to target?
If it's me, and if it's fit on the team and it's potential price, I still like Simmonds a lot. You know, as long as you don't have to give up a first round pick for him. I understand that the Bruins don't want to go the rental route as the first preference, especially if they're going to give up assets. You know, you don't want a repeat of last year where you give up a lot for a player like Rick Nash, which was the right move and made sense at the time, but, you know, give up all those things and then really not left with anything after the season is over and you're out in the second round. But I think just as far as fit, as far as the way that he plays, as far as some of the elements that he brings to the table, as far as, you know, the big, strong, surly presence on that right side potentially for David Krejci. I like all of those things. I like that he's going to be a free agent. You would think he'd be really motivated to have a strong final few months and a great playoff. And maybe even he likes it in Boston and, you know, you can work something out, kind of like they thought they were going to have with Nash before the concussion thing became a problem. But, like, of the names that you mentioned, I think a lot of them would fit in a pretty good way. Most of those guys are pretty big, good-sized players. Some play more physical than others, but I think they bring a little bit of that element of something different, along with being able to finish off plays, you know, that the Bruins need. And you know, it'll be interesting to see how it plays out. I also think that, you know, Peter Solaric and the way that he's played, he's been pretty good. Obviously, he's young and he's inconsistent, but the way that he's played since he came up, whether it's as a trade chip or whether it's, you know, you're looking at him on that line and what it would look like if you put a real big scoring element like Pastrnak on the other side, and whether you could potentially get by with that. I think it does give the Bruins a little bit more as far as options go going into the deadline. But you know me, Rye. I've been on the Wayne Simmonds train for a long time. I know he's not having the greatest year. I know he's not the greatest defensive player for the Flyers right now. But I think of all of the players out there, I think he would make the best fit for David Krejci as far as offense and physicality and all the other stuff goes.
But as you said, he is a free agent. So what does that do? I mean, they got burned a little bit on the Rick Nash thing last year. Do they go back to that well again, especially if Philadelphia is looking for something of significant value?
Yeah, I mean, you have to make – this is where the Bruins are right now, and this is what makes it complicated for Don Sweeney and them, is what are you and what do you think you're going to be in the postseason, and what are you willing to give up? Are you going for broke this year? Do you think you have a chance at a cup? Is it worth giving up those assets for something like that? Are you trying to build the team and improve the team? And thinking more long-term than short-term, as far as what you're going to bring in, and if you're going to give up those assets, you want a player that you're going to control for a while. I mean, it's good business and smart business to do that, but you also got Patrice Bergeron, Brad Marchand, Zdeno Chara, Tuukka Rask, all these players that are, you know, on the back end of their prime, and the window isn't going to be open forever for them, and you're in a playoff spot. But, you know, Toronto, it took everything you had to beat them in seven games last year, and they've added Jake Muzzin and added John Tavares since then. You know, it's going to be a lot more difficult to beat them in the playoff series. Tampa, obviously, I think is in a different class than almost everybody in the NHL right now, the way that they've played. Do you really foresee enough out there that you can realistically get that's going to put you over the top against those teams? It's a really hard spot to be in if you're Don Sweeney right now, and what kind of move you're going to make, and whether you're going to give up all of those assets to make a deal that could end up being a player you only have for a few months, or is it better to, you know, be patient, maybe wait until the summertime, wait until a Panarin becomes available again, and you can take another run at him instead of giving up all these things at the deadline for a guy that's going to be a free agent if that's the guy that you want. It's going to be a really tough choice, and as you said, all these players have all these different pros and cons when you're going out and getting them. But the bottom line is you've got to make a decision on where you think you are and whether you think a Stanley Cup is a realistic goal this year. And I think that's where the Bruins are right now as they evaluate their team.
All right. You mentioned, you know, some of the changes that they've made, you know, internally. Solaric coming up and giving them some, you know, some positive minutes up front. They shuffled the lines the other night. It looks like they're going to stay with that today with, you know, Heinen ended up being on the Bergeron line, Pasternak going down. Are they going to, you think, over the next couple of weeks kind of experiment in that direction to just see, like, you know, if there's a possibility that we might be able to find something here that we hadn't already found?
Yeah, I think so. And I think it's also a look at a possible, you know, the scenario of what if we don't go out and get the player that we think we're going to get, and, you know, what would this team look like after the deadline if there's not a significant player that comes in. Also, I think, you know, Solaric, the way that he's played, you put Heinen up with Bergeron and Marchand, and maybe he goes on a little bit of a hot streak being in that position. Maybe that ups his value, too. And I think it does both of those things. It certainly is giving them a look at, with a healthy lineup now, playing around with things and seeing what it would look like one way or the other after the deadline. And I think it's also putting some players that maybe, you know, have struggled at times this year in the best spot possible to succeed, to up their value and up what they look like to other teams going into the end of the month of the trade deadline. And, you know, everybody's been calling for a long time, Ryan, for Pasternak to be with Krejci for a long period of time to kind of see what that would look like, see if that chemistry that they've had at times can translate into offense and allow them to, you know, diversify and, you know, get offense from multiple lines and become a little bit more dangerous team to contain. And, you know, now people, I think, are going to get their wish. And, you know, with Solaric playing the way that he's playing on that side, if he can continue to play that way, I think you should take a look at that line and see what it would look like as a trio over a little bit more of an extended time.
Joe Haggerty, NBC Sports Boston, joining us on the Volkswagen Dealers Expert Hotline. Appreciate the time this morning. Get back to the game.
Yeah, you got it, guys. See ya.
All right, we will continue here on this edition of the Sports Hub Hockey Show. More with Judd and Bob from over at the Garden coming up next. And your phone calls welcome, of course, at 617-779-0985.
Press the right pants in! Let's go!
The Sports Hub Hockey Show on 98.5, The Sports Hub.
.985 The Sports Hub and the Sports Hub Hockey Show, 617-779-0985. It's Ryan Johnston here in our Town Fair Tire Studios over at TD Garden. Judd Surratt and Bob Beers are with us as well. All right, we alluded to it earlier, guys, and we haven't really talked much about it, but Bruce Cassidy has not been shy at times about shuffling his lines in games and, you know, trying to generate some offense or, you know, trying to kickstart his team if it's just not there. We saw it against the Rangers the other night. It paid off, certainly, in the early part. And then, of course, the lead got away. But he's going to, it looks like, based on practice yesterday, stick with it at least for a little bit and move Pasternak down with Krejci. They put Danton Heinen up in the Bergeron line the other night. They've also, you know, pushed DeBrusk down to a third line role right now. So, first of all, your thoughts on the move? Why was, you know, now the right time to, you know, to kind of experiment with this? And how long do you anticipate that they're going to stay with this look?
Well, in New York, the Bruins were looking for a spark. They were not happy with the first period. Chris Wagner joined us in the first intermission, and he said, I'll be honest with you, that was not a very good start for the Bruins. Even though they were coming off a back-to-back game, that was one of the things that the coaching staff was stressing heading into that game in that first period against the New York Rangers. So he was looking for a spark. That's the way he decided to do it. And listen, he pushed the right buttons. You got a terrific goal out of Danton Heinen, who has been playing well. The issue for him has been finishing. He's doing all the right things. He's just not putting the puck in the back of the net. He was able to make that tip on the Matt Grizzlick's shot. I do think in the bigger picture, it should be pointed out, Ryan, that's the way the Bruins are going to start today. Let's see how the game unfolds against the LA Kings, and that may force Bruce Cassidy to make subsequent changes. And the players in that room, and talking to a few guys there yesterday, they understand that based on the way they're playing or what the matchups are or where they may be, that line changes are going to happen in flight during the course of the game.
Top six right wing has been an issue all season long.
Mm-hmm.
And you just look at the number of players who have been in that spot all year, right? So you've got Pastrnak, you've got Backes playing right wing, but we're going to call him third line, right? And you got Chris Wagner, who's done an outstanding job this year, if we call that the fourth line, you know, playing in his role. But that top six, the guy that can you know, bring you offense on a nightly basis or at least scoring opportunities on a regular basis, they've been lacking. And that's where we started the talk, you know, that's where we've been talking about, okay, do they bring somebody in from the outside? So who can step up in that position? And everybody has had an opportunity there from a, you know, every offensive player has had an opportunity there. Right now it's Heinen. You know, Bjork has had an opportunity there. Donato's had an opportunity there. You know, I'm probably forgetting some guys, but you've played a number of different people in that role, and nobody's really popped. Well, you know, Heinen looked more like the guy that was on a roll at points last season in that game against the Rangers, more so than we've seen recently. And, you know, if he's able to do that, now it's just a very small sample size, and it's not just the goal that he scored. He was involved in a lot of other areas. I mean, he stripped a guy in the third period, created a scoring chance in the offensive zone. He looked like the player that, yeah, as advertised, and it was going to take the next step this year. And for whatever reason, it hasn't happened. And when you get a little snake bit, I guess you squeeze the stick and the confidence goes a bit. So he's going to get that opportunity right now. And if you move Pastrnak down alongside David Krejci, and Peter Solark has played well for the most part when he's been here. There's been a couple of games or a couple of shifts here and there, periods here and there where his play has dipped, but he's been there for the most part, you know, continue to have that pace. We'll see what that line looks like today. Yeah, nothing's written in stone. It's been changing. It's been a revolving door all season long with the way that the lines have looked. And they continue to look for the formula with the guys that they have in that locker room. And until a move is made, if a move is made, that's what Bruce Cassidy, that's one of the biggest challenges he has, is trying to find some of that other scoring and score and balance out the scoring attack.
And the coaching staff has also talked about, listen, those moves in part were trying to get Jake DeBrusk's attention. He's only got two assists in his last 11 games. He's been stuck on 14 goals for a while. He said yesterday,
I told you, I thought he deserved one the other day, but still, I mean, point taken. He needs to be better, and that is a bit of a message to him.
And he looked great that first game coming out of the bye. He played with all sorts of energy. Bruce Cassidy giving him some accolades after that game, that it looked like he had his legs, and Jake said he felt like himself, but he's felt in the subsequent games. He said, if you look at some of the games, I look a little bit lost. The Bruins need him to rediscover his game here down the stretch.
All right, we'll talk more about him and Heinen and the whole lot of them as they get set for a matchup with the LA Kings today at 1 o'clock. Judd and Bob will have the call of that one, and they will continue with us here from TD Garden. 617-779-0985. More of your calls coming up next here on the Sports Hub Hockey Show.
This is where Boston talks hockey. The Sports Hub Hockey Show on the home of the Bees, 98.5 The Sports Hub.
Hour number two of the Sports Hub Hockey Show here on a Saturday morning, 617-779-0985 is the phone number. It's Ryan Johnston here in the Town Fair Tire Studios over at TD Garden, where the Bruins take on the Kings today. We've got Judd Surratt and Bob Beers with us. We'll talk with Billy Jaffe coming up in about a half hour. He'll be over at the Garden as well to go around the NHL with us, as we're just over 2 weeks away before the trade deadline. That's come up this morning, as has the shuffling of the lines, which is expected to continue today, again, with the breakup of moving Pasternak down with Krejci and keeping Bergeron and Marchand together with Danton Heinen. Krejci, Pasternak, and Solarik was line number two there, and then DeBrusk, Frederick, and Backes, the third line at practice yesterday. I'm sorry.
Ryan?
Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, I think Trent Frederick's going to be the scratch here today.
He is. Yes. Okay.
He was not on that third line.
All right.
Yeah, so it'll be Corrali in the middle with Backes on the right, DeBrusk on the left, and then you've got Achari with Nordstrom and Wagner.
Yeah. Gotcha. Okay. I was missing
and then the D pairs, the change at D, it's going to be Carlo playing with John Moore and Matt Grizzlick, who did not skate yesterday and didn't see him this morning here at TD Garden unless he beat me to the ice at 8:30. He is scheduled to be out of the lineup with a lower body injury.
Right. And that's something that I think Bruce Cassidy said, you know, he fought through it in New York the other night, but was kind of lingering on Thursday, and so they just decided, let's give him a little time. And that's, you know, we've talked about the depth of this defensive core before, and, you know, who sits out and who's – that's the nice part about it, is if you got a guy who doesn't have – you know, it might not be something serious, but if you've got somebody who's got a little nagging injury, you've got the depth to be able to give that guy, you know, a game or two off and not worry about – you know, calling anybody up or who's going to be replacing him in the lineup, because you do have eight legitimate NHL defensemen on this roster.
Yeah, I think that's the strength of your team, and it has to be right now. And the way they play team defense, it should be the strength of your team. And it has for the most of the season. You've gotten the goaltending, by and large, this year. You've been able to rectify some mistakes that you've made defensively, try to get out ahead of it. And you know, they had some games where they didn't like the way that they were giving up opportunities against them. But you had – so they played three games this past week, right, and you played – you played the top two teams in the Metro Division, and two good teams. The Islanders have evolved into a very good team, balanced, big, strong. I mean, there were some good battles around the front of the net, in the corners in that game. You know, nice low-scoring win against them. And you beat the Washington Capitals, your nemesis since, what, 2014 you hadn't beaten them. So I think that was what it was, like 14 straight games or whatever. But there's your top, and your Stanley Cup champs, and you beat them 1-0. You got a good goaltending performance, but it was also a good performance from the rest of your team. So, you know, I think that if you're going to win games, and right now, I'm curious. Here's what I'm curious about: does the fact that you're in the wild card spot, and if the season ended today, you would actually play the Islanders and you'd go over to the Metro Division. Does that have an effect on what you do at the deadline, the type of player that you bring in? I don't know. I don't know that answer. I would think it might. You know, but it's still wide open where you could go over and face Tampa in the first round, or you could go and face, you know, Toronto in the first round if you finish in the top. So there's a lot of – heck, Montreal is a possibility. So there's a lot of different things that can happen right now between now and the end of the season. But I wonder if that affects, you know, how you wade into the trade market.
And the other thing that – since we're talking about depth and health, which the Bruins are fortunate enough, even though Matt Grizzlick is out of the lineup today, but the Bruins, for the most part, have been healthy here in the last, I don't know, couple of weeks, which is something they haven't experienced all year. All of a sudden, the schedule is going to shift here. After the two afternoon games today and tomorrow, that will close out 30 home games for the Bruins, so only 11 home games left. You're going to start to play a more road-heavy schedule. You're going to need more healthy bodies as you go through a more rigorous stretch that you're going to have to play away from Boston.
Just going back to a question we got early on in the show today as we're talking about defensive depth, it's something that's come up prior on the show. It's something that you've raised on the show before, Bob, is, you know, finding a way to maybe give Zdeno Chara a rest along the way. I think Maria asked about,
you know, Bruce Cassidy making mention that they might want to do that at some point. How do you balance that against, as you guys are talking about, this, you know, this, the schedule's not going to be the easiest in the world. There is going to be a lot of travel. You are going to have to deal with some injuries here and there. You would expect, it's just part of life. So, you know, how do they balance that and still try to get 33 a little bit of a breather now and then?
Well, if you're not going to, there's a couple different ways you can do it. One is, you know, to sit out if it's a back-to-back. Maybe there's some travel involved, whatever. I mean, first of all, getting him to accept it's going to be difficult because he's a guy that wants to play every day. But you can also manage some of his minutes. And I think, you know, they've tried to do that this season where, you know, if you're behind in a game, you're not going to see him as much throughout, you know, the 60 minutes. If you're ahead in a game, you'll probably see him more. So you try to manage his minutes that way. That's on a nightly basis. But it's kind of a tough situation where you want to put out your best lineup every night because points are at such a premium and, you know, you're not locked into any playoff spot, and I think that's a real kind of tough. Are you better in the long run by having him sit out a game or two, or does it not really matter that much to have him sit out a game or two? You know, that's something that they've got to try to figure out as they move down the stretch. Now, if they get down towards the end and they're, you know, solidified into a playoff spot, then you're talking about, okay, well, if we win a couple more games, maybe we're in this spot as opposed to, you know, in the first wild card, maybe we got a chance at second place in the Atlantic and you get home ice advantage. So there's always a dilemma on, you know, unless you're Tampa Bay, right? It's, you know, everybody's jockeying for position still.
All right, let's go to some more of your calls here. Mark, you're up next on the Sports Hub Hockey Show. Good morning.
Hey, good morning, guys. Thanks for taking my call. I got a couple of things. First, on the Danton Heinen. Obviously, this year, he's done absolutely nothing on the Krejci line. Do you think, by moving him up to the Bergeron line, playing with Marchand, that it might improve his play? Or, on the other hand, will it screw up the chemistry from that first line and what they produced all year? And my second question is, it's actually a concern of mine, and I hate to think this, but is Charlie McAvoy going to be a bust?
Okay.
that's a
pretty big jump right now, but okay.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not going with a bust thing, but he needs to be better, though. There's no question. And whether it's some of the injuries is sustained or maybe it's a confidence level for him right now, you know what he's capable of and you know how good he can be. But he needs to be, you know, better than he's been here recently, especially since coming back from injury. So, you know, you're kind of looking for him to, and I think he needs reps, and they're trying to get him reps. I mean, how many minutes did you say he played the other day?
Played just a hair under 25 minutes the other night.
You know, and some of it was good, and some of it not so good against the Rangers. So, you know, they're trying to get him those reps and trying to let him play through it. I think he will. You know, I think he's a special player, and he's capable of being a special player for a long time. But he's got to play through some of the, you know, some of the second year slump that he's going through right now.
Yeah, I don't think he's immune to any of the issues that a lot of second year players usually encounter. And since he brought up Danton Heinen as well, I think Danton has certainly experienced that. I don't think having a guy like Danton on that line is necessarily going to take away from Bergeron and Marchand.
Not if he plays like he did the other day against the Rangers. And it's a very, very small sample size, but that was, he was impressive in that game.
Will the line be as prolific as a group? Not necessarily, but I think if you look at the way line construction goes for whether it's Bruce Cassidy or a lot of coaches around the National Hockey League, sometimes the coaches work in pairs, and he wants to keep Marchand and Bergeron together.
Just to the point about McAvoy, I mean, it's easy to forget. This is a 21-year-old kid who's played 90 career regular season games in the NHL. I mean, he obviously made a big splash as a rookie, and a lot's expected of him, and you'd like to see him playing more consistent hockey. But at the same time, look, he's a young guy playing defense. It takes a while for those guys to kick in. I mean, we talk about this a lot with younger defensemen, that it might take a couple hundred games before they really, you know, find their footing in the NHL. Now, a guy like McAvoy that's got the skill that he's got, you'd like to see that accelerated a little bit more, but he's, you know, basically played a year and a half in the NHL. It's not like he's you know, 5-6 years in here. I mean, there's a long way to go upwards.
He's battled some significant injuries too. You know, I mean, he had the knee injury last year. He had the heart ailment last year. He had this year. He's, you know, he's got the concussion. So I mean, there's been some injuries that have occurred with him that, you know, he's got to kind of get himself through right now. And it's something where, yeah, he had the foot infection, right? So there's been some funny things that have kind of happened to him. And I think for him, you know, so much is expected. And I think he expects it of himself. And then you start concentrating, okay, I only have this many shots in this many games. All right, so now I got to get pucks to the net. I got to get, you know, so you're kind of in between. And instead of just letting it flow and playing. And I'm not saying they're handling it wrong. I'm saying that, you know, he's got to get through it where he's not overthinking certain things. And, you know, if he's healthy physically, reasonably so, then it's a mental thing right now for him. And it's just got to play through it. And like I said, the reps will help him in that situation. He's going to be I still believe he's going to be a special player. You know, when you watch him play and you watch what he's capable of, when you saw him when he first came up and you saw him at points last year, you know that this guy can be a difference maker, and it's something that's going to happen for him. Even late in the playoffs last year, a couple of those games late against Tampa Bay where he was just, I mean, he really started, you say, okay, he's back, you know, he's back from that knee injury. So, and you look at a guy like Carlo, right? Good first year, rough second year. Now this year he's taken a step forward, another step forward in that development. You got to realize that some of these guys are young guys. McAvoy's in his second season, Carlo's in his third season. These guys continue to evolve, and just like, you know, Judd was just saying, sometimes or you guys were just saying it, sometimes it takes, you know, a couple of seasons to really kind of get to the level or close to the level where you're capable of reaching.
Let's go to Steve. You're up next here on the Sports Hub Hockey Show.
Hi, guys. Thanks for taking my phone call. I think Hanks mentioned about it earlier, that the Bruins have to make a philosophical decision on, are they ready to have a chance to win a Stanley Cup, or do they not have enough and they build a little bit for the future? I think they definitely need to do something because they owe it to the veterans and the team. I don't see where a rental would help them if they don't think they can get to the Stanley Cup or get deep in the playoffs this year. So I would put my attention towards trading for guys that have term in their contract, our wingers that are potentially offensive players. And I'm mentioning Silverberg from Anaheim, DeZingle from Ottawa, maybe Charlie Coyle from Minnesota. I think I would go after that route if possible. Get a guy with term. Last year, the Nash thing kind of blew up on him where, you know, maybe he was going to sign with him or not, but that kind of blew up on him. And last but not least, I don't understand why David Backus is in a lineup tonight. With St. Louis is close to making the playoffs or qualifying, I think, and there's a void of leadership in St. Louis, I think they ought to call them and try to maybe move Backus back that way and, you know, get another player off our roster, but maybe get up underneath that contract at the same time. I'd be interested in what you guys think. Thank you.
All right. Appreciate the call, Steve.
A couple of the guys that he mentioned in those trades are actually expiring contracts. Mm-hmm. DeZingle's going to be an unrestricted free agent. That's a rental unless he's and if I'm not mistaken, Silverberg is in the last year of his contract. They're trying to re-sign him in Anaheim. So those guys are expiring contracts, and technically, unless you re-sign them, they're rentals. So I have no problem with getting a guy with term if it's the right guy, if it's the right fit. So, but also, if you're going to go the rental route with an opportunity maybe to re-sign that player, you know, that's something that, you know, you try to work out ahead of time if you try to have that conversation or get permission to talk with an agent, you know, about that. But there's a lot of different routes that they can go right now. It's just a matter of what you want to pay in order to get guys in here. And as far as going deep in the playoffs, I think you're capable. I'm not getting ahead of myself, not saying it's you're not going to be favored against a Tampa Bay. You're not going to be favored against even a Toronto. How are you against the Islanders? That's the team you face right now. And then who's going to come out of the Metro Division? You know, there's a lot of different ways this thing can go. And I go back to my point about, does it change the way that you approach the trade deadline based on who you might play in the first round? You know, the type of team you might play in the first.
And I think that's valid, you know, but let's go back. So who was the big ad for the Washington Capitals last year at the trade deadline? You remember?
Yeah, it was the defenseman.
Michael Kempney.
Yeah.
Michael Kempney was the guy who they added, and he had a terrific run during the Stanley Cup playoffs. So it's not always, I'm going back
to
something
name, yeah.
Bob mentioned, it's not always the big name
people
that has the spectacular. Absolutely. And then all of a sudden they're looking after, they hoist the Stanley Cup. Boy, this guy was pretty good. That was a nice pickup by Brian McClellan, the general manager. So those are the names that you have to sort of zero in on. So can Don Sweeney find, if he's going to go out and acquire somebody, can he find the right fit that all of a sudden makes maybe an exponential difference?
We go back a few years ago, right? And you know, I know we're going back 7, 8, 9 years ago, whatever it is, 8 years ago, and you know, the Bruins pick up Rich Peverly and Chris
I was
Kelly.
Just going to say the same thing, yeah. Nobody was dancing in the streets when they made those
deals.
The
year before, they picked up Dennis Seidenberg. Who? You know, it's just like this is there are a lot of players around the league. It's not always the game, the names that are mentioned day in and day out, and the names you always see in the rumor mill.
All right, we'll continue with Judd and Bob over at the Garden this morning, 617-779-0985. We can do more of your calls coming up as we continue on this edition of the Sports Hub Hockey Show.
This is the Sports Hub Hockey Show with Ryan Johnston, Judd Zerah, and Bob Beers on the home of the Bees, 98.5, the Sports Hub.
The Sports Hub. Sports Hub Hockey Show. Ryan Johnston, joined by Judd Zerah and Bob Beers, who are over at the Garden this morning. Bruins and Kings today at 1 o'clock, and then the Avalanche in tomorrow for a 3 o'clock matinee as well. 617-779-0985 if you want to jump in with us here. And Billy Jaffe will join us coming up in a little over 10 minutes. We'll go around the NHL with him as we're throwing, you know, some names that have been thrown out there this morning and whatnot. Billy's always good for updates on some of those players. And we're just talking, guys, based on the last caller, and I wanted to kind of circle back around to this, the idea of rental players. And I know we've talked about how Rick Nash last year, the idea of trading for him was not necessarily for him to be a rental. It didn't work out that way. It turned out that he ended up having to retire, but that they were going to be interested in trying to keep him around here long term. A lot of the names that get tossed out prior to the trade deadline are going to be rental players. And I think, Bob, you kind of said something along those lines that, you know, might they go that route of bringing in a guy who, he's going to be a free agent, but, you know, see if they can explore it a little bit beforehand and say, okay, you know, what is this guy going to be looking for in the offseason? And maybe this is a guy that we can keep around here longer term. Because I think that's the question is, like, the caller asked, do you really load up and try and go for it if you think you're a cup contender? Well, this team is set up not only to try and go for it, but also is set up for, you know, an extended run here. You've got at least a few years left of the core players on this team. You know, they're getting older, but they're still at the top of their game. So it's kind of a mix there for Don Sweeney, right? Where, you know, you want to take a shot at it this year, but you also don't want to screw up the next couple of years or the future because you've got a chance to be good for a while with this group.
Yeah, well, I mean, where do you value some of the younger guys? I mean, is it, whatever deal you make is going to cost you, right? So it's you've got to weigh, you know, the pluses. Let me throw this one at you. I mean, Artemi Panarin, you keep talking about him.
Sure.
He just switched agents in Columbus. I mean, does that make you, I mean, how much better does that make you as a team, and what are you willing to give up for something like that? I mean, I know that the price is going to be extremely high, and there's other teams, there's a lot of teams that you're bidding against, but I'm saying that how far away are they from being a real serious contender in the East, and does one guy change that complexion? And I think if it's the right guy, I think all of a sudden you've got a whole different look to your lineup, you've got a whole different look to your team, and all of a sudden you're saying, wow, I think we do have a chance against maybe a Tampa, you know, or whoever you might play. So you've got to weigh that. And some of these guys, like you said, they're in their primes right now. Some of the guys, you know, Chara's 41, but you've got Bergeron, you've got Marchand, you've got Krejci. I mean, these guys are playing at a high level right now. And do you owe it to them to try to improve and try to make that run? And that's a situation that the Bruins were in last year, and they decided ultimately, yeah, we're in this position. We feel that we've got a team that can to get out of the East. No, they didn't beat Tampa for various reasons. Rick Nash didn't work out, but they went for it. So I'm real curious to see what Don Sweeney does this season.
Well, Panarin is a guy who's, you know, tremendously intriguing because of the numbers that he brings. And, you know, he's a guy who's, you know, he's 27 years old. He's at the top of his game. But
an expiring contract.
It's an expiring contract, and one that's going to be, you know, if you wanted to try and keep him around, it's going to be terribly expensive. So, I mean,
true, but, you know, but at this point, you know, and you've got some other contracts that I think Don Sweeney has to work out. But he's in a decent cap position. You've got to re-up with, what, McAvoy and Carlo are the two guys that come to mind in particular. You know, what are those numbers going to look like? And what is Artemi Panarin going to look like going forward? Granted, you're going to have a little bit more leeway because of where the cap is going to be, but he's going to command an awfully high price.
I just throw his name out there for the simple reason as does the addition of that player right there or somebody like him, does that increase your playoff hopes to the point where you think, okay, now we might not be the favorite, but we can definitely get out of the East and give yourself a chance to win. So, does the team right now give you that feeling? No, it doesn't. I think that they can compete, but you need a lot of things to go right in order to come out of the East. But if you add a player like him or somebody else, and throw any name, you know, X out there, does that give you the opportunity? And they felt that last year with Rick Nash.
Well, I mean, there are some names on the list that I think a lot of fans would look at and go, I think that guy does. I think Panarin is one of those names. I think people look at that and say, that's exactly what you want. But, you know, can you keep him around? You know, do you want to be in the same position that you're in now a year from now?
Which is obviously that's going to impact the price again.
Yeah,
it's going to obviously impact the price because where is his head going forward? Where does he want to be? Now he's change agent, so I have no idea if his thoughts have changed on this or not. But the thought was that he wanted to go to particular markets that had a Russian population. Where does winning factor in for a guy like Artemi Panarin? We don't know that.
Yeah, and sure. Listen, I don't mean to focus on that one guy. I mean, I'm saying a player like him or
sure.
an impact player around the league that can give you an opportunity. I just threw him out as an example. Because
no, but that's a name that you're going to hear a lot over the next couple of weeks in a lot of cities because everyone knows he's available and he's got talent and teams are going to be hungry for him.
Right, you know, and what made Jake Muzzin such a valuable pickup for the Toronto Maple Leafs is because he had some term left on his contract, and he had it at a number that was very easy for the Maple Leafs or another team that wants to contend for a championship. It's easy for them to absorb. That's why they had to pay a little bit of a premium to get him.
I want to ask about one other player, and then Billy Jaffe is going to be with us, so we'll kind of circle into it with him. But a name that came up this week is a guy that's in town today, is Tyler Toffoli. Different type of player, obviously, than Panarin. Does have a year left on his contract. Is that somebody that you could see the Bruins deciding might be able to help this team in the postseason?
Listen, he's a good young player. I haven't had a chance to see him this year. He's got Stanley Cup playoff experience. If memory serves, he's a guy who's registered 30 goals in the past. I don't know necessarily why he has fallen out of favor with a Los Angeles Kings team that Rob Blake is trying to remake here on the fly. But I think that a guy like Tyler Toffoli could be a fit playing on the right side with a guy like David Krejci.
We can talk more about him with Billy. As I said, he'll join us coming up after the break. We'll get Sarge's Sports Hub headlines here, and then the final half hour of the Sports Hub Hockey Show coming up.
The Bruins, the NHL. This is the show that's all hockey.
He scores!
The Sports Hub Hockey Show with Ryan Johnston, Judd Sirai, and Bob Beers on 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Our final half hour of the Sports Hub Hockey Show here on this Saturday. Ryan Johnston in the Town Fair Tire Studios over at the Garden today. Bruins and Kings, 1 o'clock face-off. Judd Surratt, Bob Beers, have been joining us all morning from over there, and now we're joined as well by Billy Jaffe, part of the Nesson broadcast, of course, and part of the hockey show every Saturday morning right around this time. What's going on, Billy?
Just love matinee hockey, RJ. Let's drop it right now.
Ryan,
I was just
putting the pressure on Billy. I said that you put the pressure on him, saying that he'll come up with some names. He's connected. He's got names.
Always do.
Yes.
Always
yeah.
do. We've
Lemieux,
had a number of names.
Gretzky.
David, those guys McKinnon. Those guys might make you cup contenders. Some of them. Let's talk about some of the, look, I mean, we were talking about Panarin prior to the break as, not even necessarily with the Bruins, but a guy of that's going to draw a lot of attention. There's a lot of other names that are drawing a lot of attention going into this trade deadline. A name that came up this week that I thought was intriguing was Tyler Toffoli, who's going to be there with the Kings today, because he's got a year left on his contract, because he's got, he's got some chops in the NHL, certainly. Is that a guy that you could see the Bruins targeting? And then the other question that comes up is, I know the Kings are having a rough year, but why would they be trading a guy that has a year of term left on his deal?
All right, well, let me start with the second question first. Why would they consider something like that? They need to change the culture in L.A. It's gotten a very comfortable, there's the beach, there's the attitude, there's the lifestyle. And I think that, I'm not saying that Tyler Toffoli is part of the comfort level that's maybe gotten too comfortable there, because some of the veterans probably have. But they definitely need to make some major changes, even if they find a way in the malaise of mediocrity that is the Western Conference, to somehow jump up and get into the playoffs, which I don't think will happen. But if it did, would it shock anybody really with how bad the West is?
They're 5 points out of a playoff.
Well, that's
spot,
my point, Judd.
The bottom of the Western Conference as we start here today.
Okay, let me rephrase it.
Also,
the malaise of mediocrity.
5 points but having the fewest points in the
NHL. Right. So, okay. So why would they look to trade a guy like that? Because that will bring you a bigger return. All right? That would, in theory. Now, Tyler Toffoli in particular. Questions. Does he work hard enough along the wall? Does he battle enough for pucks? He can score at times. None of these guys are really having what you would call big years this year for L.A. That's part of their problem. I would think that they will consider moving anybody out of there. They can't move Drew Doughty out of there. I don't think they would move Anže Kopitar. But this is a team that doesn't have many what I would call overly tradable assets. The one that was their biggest fish to trade was get traded in Jake Muzzin to the Toronto Maple Leafs. But yes, would the Bruins consider that now? I mean, yeah. Does he have the foot speed to play with the pace with which they really want to? Probably not. But yes, RJ, they would consider that type of move. And the whole Panarin thing, I'm not on board with it. I'm just getting it out there. I don't see it happening. I don't see the reality of it happening here. That's my statement.
I threw his name out just because. I'm saying that, an impact player.
Can I throw out the one guy that I'd love?
Yeah, Mark Stone.
Thank you. Thank you. That's the one guy.
He's number one on my list but
it's the impact. That's the only reason I brought his name. I'm not suggesting it.
Okay.
I'm saying that it was just you bring in an impact player,
right?
And if it's somebody on an expiring contract, so be it. But it does change the way that what you might have to give up but it's, they went for it last year with an impact player in Rick Nash.
Absolutely, and the right move.
Yeah, I think we were all in agreement in this booth.
Yes.
Anyhow,
100%.
So if you're going that route, okay, you're not going to bring in a guy on an expiring contract that's not going to make the impact that you need.
Right.
That's my whole point with Panarin. So it's not just him. I'm not suggesting that specifically.
We don't know what, the whole Panarin thing, changing agents from Paul Theofanis, who also represents Sergei Bobrovsky. It could be a big, there could be a big thing there. It could be a smokescreen of sorts. Who knows why he did it? Maybe he was ticked off at Milstein, his agent, that didn't get him out of Columbus soon enough. Maybe he wanted to get out of there before. He says he's all in. He says he'll actually consider Columbus in the offseason. I don't believe that for one second. I don't. But now, listen, I just don't see Panarin signing here when it's all said and done. It's nothing against Boston. We all love Boston. I don't think it's his fit. I don't think it's what he wants. Now, could I see a guy like Mark Stone with absolutely no insight or insider knowledge whatsoever? He just seems to fit here better. I'd love to get a guy like Mark. You got Mark Stone and Pasta. Oh my gosh, you're right, wingers. Hello.
Well, whether it's Ottawa, Los Angeles, Columbus, you also have to consider, are the Bruins a trade fit for that particular team? So Rob Blake came out publicly and said one of the things that they lack in their system is they don't have a lot of high-end forwards that are coming up through their system.
Yeah.
They did pick up a couple of D prospects, if memory serves, along with a first-round pick in exchange for Jake Muzzin.
Yes.
So they may have addressed a few of their deficiencies on the back end, but that's what they're looking for in a match if you're trying to acquire a guy like Tyler Toffoli or someone else off of their roster.
One of the other things that's muddling it right now is because the West is, now, how did you describe it?
It's a malaise of mediocrity. Yeah, that's what it's a gaggle of.
Yeah, but you have all these teams that are within, you know, a couple points of the wild card spot out West, and because it's so bad,
right?
You know, the top end teams are very good, and then you've just got nothing after that, and teams going in the wrong direction. But then in the East, you know, how many teams are available there? There's only, there's probably 6-7 teams, right? That are. Five, six, seven teams that are looking to change.
Carolina, I thought, would trade Michael Ferland. That was the word that I'd heard that I'd gotten 4 weeks ago, that, you know, they were going. And then all of a sudden, 3 weeks ago, they start, you know, were they faking it? Were they trying to raise the price when they said, we'll keep him as our own rental? Maybe. We'll consider that. I don't believe Don Waddell was going to keep him at all. Now that
they're one of the hottest teams in the league right now.
Well, they're the most points since the new year. 12-4-1, I believe, in 15 games. Is that or 16 games, right? 17? I can't do math. Is that right? Something. 12-4-1 since the new year.
They're the hottest team since we turned the calendar to 2019.
Okay.
How's that?
So all of a sudden, RJ, it's like, whoa. And see, to me, Tom Dundon there, who doesn't want to pay, he does not want to. I mean, relatively speaking, big contracts. I think he says, let's go for the playoffs now. Because he'll make money on at least, you know, a couple of games at home. And all of a sudden he comes off as the guy riding the white horse, you know, like Charles Wong did some years ago in Long Island. They made the playoffs and everybody felt good for a little bit. This is the type of image I think that he wants there. And he does it on the cheap, so to speak. And then if Ferland leaves, it's, hey, Ferland didn't want to be here. It's his issue.
He's the owner of Major League, right?
There you go. Prop plane.
We want to lose.
Yes.
All right. So let's talk about a guy who's not going to be a free agent for a long time, and that's Austin Matthews. Gets a 5-year extension this week, $11.6 million per. First, it's a massive contract, obviously, for a great player, but it seems like there are going to be some rumblings around the league from other GMs who are concerned about what this does to the salary structure to give a young guy this much money this early.
I have one other name for you, Connor McDavid. 12 and a half, Jack Eichel, another name.
That ship has sailed years ago.
Yeah,
that's what they're talking. I mean, I saw a quote from Ken Holland this week talking about how, you know, this isn't going to be good for us.
Well, I think what he's referring to is the shorter contract, the 5-year term at the heavier cap hit.
Yep.
And you know what?
And only 1 year of unrestricted free agency given up.
That he's given up.
Contract.
Right. And but Toronto had to do this type of deal. They had to be able to have a prayer of fitting almost everybody in for next season.
Yeah, what's Marner going
to get? This is accelerated by, in my opinion at least, Toronto's ability and need to win the cup.
Right.
While I know they have Tavares for six more after this, and they have Matthews for 5 after this, I don't know in 3 years or 2 years if they're going to be in that spot.
Yeah.
But this year and next year, they are, especially, they'll be able to re-sign Marner. They will. It will come at the demise of their defense, though. I think we all know that.
Yeah, Jake Gardner's going to be gone.
Well, Jake Gardner,
potentially.
Hainsey's going to be gone, and people might say, oh, Ron Hainsey, doesn't matter. You know what? You need to fill out your D with somebody. Now, if you have two guys called up from the American League playing, you better make sure that they're really, really good. But this accelerates Toronto's need to win the Stanley Cup. RJ, you know what? It's 1G. I get what you're saying, that there's been a little talk about it, but I feel like it's 1GM. And if he was in this position to have to do the same type of move, you better believe, buddy, he would have done it in a millisecond to sign Austin Matthews to that amount, to that salary.
What does it mean for Marner's next contract?
I believe that they're going to try and get him at 10. I've talked to people in Toronto. They think it's a $10 million deal. If they can get him for 9.5, they will probably play the route of, not the argument, but the
Draisaitl?
Well, they'll say Draisaitl, but they'll also say, listen, we love you, you're great, Matthews is the man in the middle. He's a center. He drives it, and you're a winger, basically. And they're going to try and do comps in that regard. I can't see them signing for Drysdale at 8 to 8.5. What is it, 8.5? I can't see him getting 11. I see him at 9.5 to 10 million. I think the double digit is the magical number for him. I just can't believe that you're going to have a team with three guys. We were shocked when Chicago went to two guys at $10.5 million a year. Now you're going to have three guys 10 plus on one team.
That's a huge chunk of your salary cap wrapped up into three guys. And as you said, what you say, it's going to, you know, it's going to suck money out of their defense, going to suck the talent out of their defense, which has already been a problem. I mean,
don't be surprised.
They added Muzzin, yeah. But that's been their problem for the last few years is they haven't had the talent on defense, and they're not going to be able to afford to get any better back there.
Well, we're also talking about some other guys who play a little bit lower in their lineup as forwards that you're going to have to resign. What are you going to do with Kasperi
Kapanen? I think you trade him.
And that's probably
what
you end up doing.
Yeah.
You know, I don't think, personally,
Nylander.
Yeah.
And Kyle Dubas, that's exactly where I was going. Kyle Dubas, I don't know if it took place or not, but it's been out there that he supposedly promised him he wouldn't trade him. I would have never made him that promise. The only promise I would have made is that I am beholden to the Toronto Maple Leafs and making this team into a championship contender, and I'll do whatever it takes to be able to do that. That's the promise that he should have made. But that said, you know, if you look around the National Hockey League, and whether it's this market or any other, what do we hear? Boy, we really could use some secondary scoring. Boy, we're really kind of top heavy. The National Hockey League salary structure has taken the secondary scoring or made it harder for teams to do that on a consistent basis because of the salary structure.
All right, Billy. So let's take a little bit of a look at, you know, the teams that are kind of going and not going right now around the league, as you guys were mentioning. Mm-hmm. And the West is outside of the top few teams, the West is an absolute mess right now. Everybody's kind of gotten back into the race there just out of, everybody else is falling off. LA, Anaheim, Arizona, they're all, Chicago's 2 points out of a playoff spot now. They look like they were going to be left for dead, you know, a few weeks ago, and now they've won six in a row and they're right in the thick of things. Go ahead.
Let's start with this one team, though. It's in a real conundrum right now, RJ, in the West. What do the Minnesota Wild do right now? They lose Mikko Koivu to a season-ending injury. Every team in the world is calling them right now because they know that they need something. They don't know what they're going to do yet with Charlie Coyle either. You know, he's back to center. He's better. They know that he can be. It's feast or famine at times with Coyle. This is a team that is prime. And they already made a deal. They got Nino Niederreiter, or they traded Niederreiter for Victor Rask, who has gone Houdini on them. I think he has one goal in his time there. What are they going to do? Paul Fenton's under pressure to make the playoffs there, and I just don't see a team that is really ready to make the playoffs right now. So there's one team. I see them falling off, all right? But now, do they have anything that you really want there? Now you bring up Chicago. Chicago, you know, Judd, they got to make the playoffs, right? They'd love to make the playoffs. Whether or not they're a good team is irrelevant. That's a market that just, if they make the playoffs, I think that really satiates management's appetite, and I think their ego, too. I'm not speaking for you. I'm saying this is my opinion, to make the playoffs and to show the hockey world that the moves that they made, getting rid of Joel Quenneville, was the right move for this team because they took a lot of heat for that move, and now if they can make the playoffs, they'll say, yep, you see, we told you we had young talent, we have some great vets, and we can make the playoffs. So I think they're going to feel like that they did the right thing. I think they're going to push for the playoffs. I do. They're back in it. How they're doing it, it's Patrick Kane. He's got to be right up there as league MVP, one of the top three, for sure top five, if not top three guys for what's going on right there. And then, you know, you've got other teams that are, I mean, St. Louis is the one that jumps out too. And, you know, Jordan Binnington? I mean, hello, Hamburglar. Andrew Hammond, this is coming from a couple of years ago in Ottawa. Binnington is the only thing he's doing it without is getting hamburgers thrown at him at the end of the game onto the ice. It's unbelievable. What is he, 9-1-1 in his first 11 games in the National Hockey League? And he's given them what they need in net. And that is balancing. I also think Craig Berube's a good coach. I do. I don't know if he always gets a fair assessment. I think he's a good player's coach, and I think he has that ability to get the most out of teams.
Well, that roster in particular, it underperformed early in the season.
For what reason? We have no idea, but that was a roster heading into the season. You felt like
I think
this
veterans
was a team
there were
that could have competed for a playoff spot, and it at least for the bulk of the season it hadn't happened. As we start action today, they own the last wild card spot in the West, but it's a very tenuous hold.
I don't think the veterans in St. Louis, when all the trades were made in the offseason, I think, first of all, guys weren't sure of their roles, and I think some of the vets were not pouting, but I don't think that they were as comfortable as they probably would like to be there. I think they wanted more love, more attention, perhaps, and it was some of the new guys coming in. Ryan O'Reilly got a lot of the attention, and he's been nothing short of fantastic for that team there.
All right, just real quick in the final 30 seconds or so, give us a preview of the game today. L.A., worst record in the West, but as we said, they're back in the playoff hunt. They've actually won three in a row coming into today. What's the matchup?
Well, they're a heavier team. They are definitely not a speed team. If the Bruins get their giddy up going, I think that's a huge advantage for them in this game. The Kings are playing with house money. They definitely... look, they don't expect to make the playoffs, but yet again, as we said, as Bob said, they're five from the best and five from the worst. They're right there. I always think you're playing teams this time of year, but playing with house money, it's dangerous. The Bruins haven't fared well lately against teams that are below them. This would be a perfect spot to take it to them. The Bruins are a deeper team. I think they can attack their back end with speed, some lateral plays, move the puck behind the net, change sides. You can spin them around, I think, and get some opportunities. I'm assuming Jonathan Quick is going to play today. I would assume so. He can be a one-man band in the net, but lateral movement for him is spectacular. Get it up high on him, too. He covers the lower part of the net beautifully.
All right, Billy, appreciate the time as always. And Judd, Bob will be listening, and Billy will be watching, and we'll all have a good time and be done with hockey early today. Appreciate the time.
Thanks, bud.
All right, that'll be it for this edition of the Sports Hub Hockey Show. Gasper and Murray coming up next. They'll take you right up until the Bruins pregame show, which is only about 90 minutes away. Face off over at the Garden today at 1 o'clock as the Bruins take on the LA Kings. We'll talk to you next week, and I'll be back with you tomorrow morning from 9 to noon with me and Flynn here on 98.5 The Sports Hub.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top five Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.